Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's John, Bam Bam the Dog. First, on behalf of both of us and everybody from the Real Ones team, I just want to sincerely thank you guys for tuning in. The folks that I bring on the show, they're family to me, and being able to tell their stories and bringing you into their world is something I'm just super proud of, and again, grateful that you guys tune in. We've decided we want to take things just a step further. We're going to introduce a Patreon community. And basically what that means is if you become part of this community, look, I already bored Bam Bam. If you want to become a part of this community, you're going to be able to hear episodes early and all that, ad-free and all that good stuff. But there's all this behind-the-scenes footage, all this stuff that we've shot that really brings you into the folks that we've had on the show, really brings you into their world. You're going to be able to do live chats with me and the folks that I bring on the show to talk about their world, talk about the issues that they're dealing with, about their triumphs and their tragedies. Just go to Patreon/RealOnes. This whole idea was something about building bridges and bringing people together and bringing folks that often don't get the mic and giving the mic to them. So the fact that you guys tune in means the world. Anyways, again, thank you. Be good to each other out there. Rock and roll. How did you guys come into each other's life? Like, how did you find out about this?
After 9/11, when I saw the Islamophobia and the kind of hate that my Muslim friends were facing, I had already like directed some movies and TV shows and stuff, and I was like, I can do something to in some small way to help. And that's when I started making these films about American Muslims, trying to tell a story that hasn't been told or wasn't being told enough. And you know, this story is our 25th film that we made. And when I came across this story about Bibi and Mac, this impossible friendship, like these guys are friends, he wanted to kill her and now they're friends, you know? I mean, it's insane. And I was like, this story actually gives me hope. Like I'm depressed about the times we live in, you know, like where's everything going? Where's all this like division? Where are we gonna go with this division we have?
It's a beautiful story, and it's beautifully told through the film. And I'm really honored that you guys came here and you're willing to talk and share with us about it. I guess for the folks that don't know, just sort of the story on the page, and then let's get into what the story is in your hearts and how it is to live that story.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good way to start. I had developed a hatred that was actually uncommon, even in the military. I even had buddies would tell me, says, Mac, you got to chill out, dude. These are just people.
And this hatred was really developed overseas?
It was developed, yeah, overseas. I mean, it was just like an ongoing thing. It fed and built off itself, man. It was insane. I even to look back and think about it, it's like, oh my gosh, man. I could be like somebody's doctorate subject for psychology, man, because the way it just manifested inside of me, it was crazy.
Was this hatred that you had, did it exist before you enlisted?
No. I didn't even know what a Muslim was before I enlisted.
Did you have hatred for any groups? I mean, did you?
No, I was never. I grew up in a black neighborhood. Right. I was actually an inner city kid. And I was part, I was in grade school in the 70s, mm-hmm. the early 70s. I was actually part of the final stages of desegregation. Mm-hmm. I was the only white kid on my school bus.
There right? you go.
I never grew up with racism in my heart. What I explain to people is that I didn't care what color you were, as long as you were from here. And if you weren't, I wanted to know why you're here and when are you leaving.
And do you think that some of that, I mean, I'm really interested in on how that sort of grew, if you want to talk about grew or how it festered in you and where that comes from. I think it's a question you put to him in the documentary that I that you really talked about, you know, what killing does, the armor that we need to put up, the mindset and what we need to do to our heart to put ourselves into that situation. I guess I know I did want like sort of like the overview of what this, but let's go at it this way first. What led you to the Marine Corps, and where were you? Where were you already enlisted during 9/11?
Yes. So what led me to the Marine Corps was that I wanted that toughness, right? You know, it's funny because I actually got led to the military by the very first Rambo movie.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It was like, I just, and why, I don't know, because that really painted an ugly picture of a veteran, really, you know? But I wanted that toughness. You know, my dad was a Marine, you know? It was just that sense of the respect and how he used to tell stories that, like, you know, by him doing this, it made him better or tougher than the guy next to him, you know what I mean? And so I was looking for that. And so the Marine Corps was my only way to get that sense of adventure, plus the fact that I needed to get out of what I was involved in at the time with drugs and stuff like that. I was going nowhere fast. Mm-hmm. You know, I was either going to end up dead or in prison. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no 401k plan when you're involved in drugs, man.
Well, I know that.
You know what I mean?
I do.
So, you know, so I just saw it as a way out and a way to something better. Mm-hmm. So,
what did you find once you enlisted? What did you find in the Marine Corps?
Well, first day I was like, geez, what was I thinking? You're an idiot. but I found my family.
Yep.
I found my sense of belonging. I found where I needed to be. And even though I had people yelling at me, it's like they cared. And I had my buddy next to me, my other buddy next to me, and that was it. Yeah, I've been married several times, unfortunately. I say that shamefully, but I had told ex-wives in the past that sense of intimacy I will never have with another human being that I had with the guy on my right and the guy on my left when we were getting shot at.
Because there's a level of dependency there that's sort of impossible to match or equal in the comforts of everyday life.
Yeah.
I don't want to classify it for you, but like, how did you feel the Marines were sort of changing you?
They were giving me a sense of my own that in the whole concept of being 10 foot tall and bulletproof, I had to get knocked down a few times before I thought that was a working theory only. but it gave me that. It gave me that, you know, I could look myself in the mirror and say, yeah, I'm that guy. And I like that. It just got to be that guy turned dark, but my attitude towards him never changed. I like that. It's kind of hard to describe. You know, it's a psychological, emotional issue, man.
Can you talk about, you know, your deployments and how things started to shift for you?
Well, I do a rough oversketch of my deployment. I don't really talk a lot about
fair enough
certain aspects of it, but I mean, yeah, 9/11 changed all of us. I don't think there's an American or even anybody around the world that it didn't have some impact on their life, you know. Especially, you know, like she gave the best description in the world, you know, where she came from a country that was this was daily life for her. And she comes here and she's living peacefully and, you know, life's great. And then all of a sudden, what? I can't get away from this. Yeah. You know, how troubling would that be? Yeah. I couldn't even imagine because, you know, me or everybody else in America, that doesn't happen.
That's right.
Right? It's
That's
peaceful.
Right.
That's we right. do what we want to do. Right? And but I think in a way it kind of opened up the floodgates for me because nobody was even going to question me now. Nobody was even going to try to tell me I was wrong or tell me that.
Wrong about what?
Wrong about the way I felt about people or
so
just other people.
You already had that sort of that inherent fear or hatred, however you want to classify it, that was already birthed in you at
that
point?
Yeah, it was there. I mean, it was there, but it blossomed. I won't give 9/11 the full credit for that. It had a lot to do with the fact that, you know, when you go someplace and you meet these people and they shoot at you, you tend to change your attitude towards
sure.
them regardless,
sure.
right? They're no longer your friend.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, look, yeah. you talk about it, you know, in the documentary, you guys talk about, you know, paper targets and the paper target metaphor that you use in the documentary. Do you think that you needed to take that approach because somewhere inside of you, you felt that shooting at people, and I know this is an extremely hard thing to ask, but that killing was going to be some part of you knew that that was going to be really hard for you?
Actually, to be honest with you, I was really immature going into it. And the first time I pulled the trigger, I remember it was very surreal. And it took me a while. It took me a while just to comprehend what had just happened, you know. And that's when I went and sought out a little bit of information on, so how do you guys cope with this, man? You know, because I was with Marine Recon, and you know, this is stuff we kind of deal with. It isn't like just a regular Marine Corps. This is, right. You know, we deal with this, you know, often. I knew this was going to cause problems, but I finally got what I wanted in a sick kind of way. I realized that this is what I wanted. I was that warrior guy, you know, tough guy. But I knew I couldn't carry on unless I found a way to make it work. Mm-hmm. And that's when I sought out help, and they gave me the example. There's many things people have used over time. I'm sure everybody you ask might have a different system, but he brought up the paper target. And I was like, that's perfect, man. The dehumanization of another person is the only... See, because normal Joe on the street, it's funny when I hear people say, oh, I'm going to kill him. Mm-hmm. No, you're not.
Yeah, stop that.
No, you're not.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
That? Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that. We as human beings are not made that way. We're not. I don't... How much hatred you have, but once you grab a hold of that firearm and you extend that arm... And you pointed at somebody, it's a different world, man. It's a totally different world.
And impossible to not take a toll on you, whether you're admitting it or whether you're dealing with it or not, it's going to take some sort of toll.
The military has spent millions and millions of dollars on research on how to get a person to flip that switch, because we're not made that way. You know, you have people, you hear about serial killers and stuff like that. I honestly believe people like that have a viable defense of being insane, because it's not normal. People don't normally act like that. I don't think they should get off necessarily, but I'm saying that should be a part of their defense, because it has to be, because there is a temporary insanity that goes on in that moment. You know, if you're fortunate enough, once it's over and done with, turn it back off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that switch gets stuck in the on position, though.
Now, this is probably really hard to talk about, but where you're looking at human beings like paper targets, or you're trying to dehumanize them, how does that then shift into hatred? Is that a natural progression? Is that another defense mechanism? Can you explain the first sort of signs or symptoms of when you started to be that for you?
I think you're right on all of those. It is another stage of defense mechanism. It's a way of coping with the fact, okay, I hate him. I hate him because this. I hate him because that. This is how I'm going to get to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Without, you know, like so many people I knew, you know, sticking a 9mm in my mouth, right? This is how I'm going to make it through, right? I hate them. They're evil. And I've done and am doing everything I can to rid the world of these evil people. When I don't see the vision in the mirror, who the real evil person is.
Right. In the units that you were involved in, I mean, was that kind of commonplace? Using it as a defense mechanism, did you find that commonplace or not really? Were you an outlier?
No, I think when it came to the hatred,
yeah.
For the most part, most of the guys I served with were a lot more professional about it than I was. I took it to extremes. I was thirsty. I was bloodthirsty, really. And I, on several occasions, I had people I served with tell me, so Mac, you got to chill, man.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we get back to on this podcast a lot, and I'm, you know, when we get into the broader discussion, I'm really interested in this, but something that I find is your capability for hate, the depths of your heart, your capability and your ability to cause harm, I find often is directly proportional to your capability and your ability to love and connect and to do good. And I wonder if the reason why you needed to build up so much hate and be such a monster was because of the toll that it took on you because of how big your heart actually was and how hard that actually was. I imagine you were completely unaware of it at the time, but would you say that's right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, and it's kind of humorous that you explain it that way, because that's the way I explain it. I tell people that I had to be all the way over here before I could come back here. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would have never stuck with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can you kind of walk me through then sort of where you're at when you come home and how sort of the hatred manifested itself once you were back in the States?
Yeah. So what had happened is I got injured in Iraq, and it was a bad enough injury to have me medically retired. I was over 20 years. So they started processing retirement, and I fought it. That's why I would have probably been retired at 21 years, but I was retired at 25 years because I kept fighting it. And, you know, I told them, I said, I need to go back to Iraq. And they were kind of looking at me, why you want to go back to Iraq, man? You made it out, dude. Nah, I'm not done killing Muslims. That's what I told them. Well, unbeknownst to me at the time I said that, that's definitely a, you're getting out. Mm-hmm. You're done.
Yeah.
You're baked. You're done, man. Right. And so I felt abandoned. My government abandoned me. The military abandoned me. They don't want me no more. What do I do? I have nothing. I love my country. You know, people had asked me many times about how hard it was to convert from Christianity to Islam. And I said, well, for one, I wasn't a Christian. I have too much respect for Christianity. I my actions were not those of a Christian. I would never say I was a Christian. I was a nationalist, not a white nationalist, a nationalist. For lack of example, the flag was my cross, right? I believed in it, man. I wanted to die for it. My whole thing was, my destiny, or so I thought, was to die and come back in a flag-draped coffin. Because, man, you know.
Yeah.
Man, you're forever a hero. I don't care who you were. You're a hero. Right? And that's how you're going to be remembered to the end of days. A hero. It didn't happen. I got cheated out of my destiny.
Was there someone specific that you wanted to see you that way? Was there someone specific?
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of theories in place. And I can't really say any of them are wrong. But, of course, all the doubters. My dad, you know.
Was your dad a doubter?
Me and my dad have had a very estranged relationship. I was a teenage runaway. When I was 17, I left home. You know, he always used to say, if you don't like it here, here's the door, right? And then he got upset when I used it. I don't get that. But, you know, so my dad has problems even now with the things that I do, and because I'm not about making money. I need money. I got to pay bills like everybody else. But I never want to make $1 million. Mm-hmm. I tell people, you know, $75,000, that's enough. $75,000 a year, I'm good with $75,000 a year. Okay, any more than that, I got to pay them fools in Washington more money, and I don't like that. Fair okay?
Yeah.
So, there is there's a lot of theories that I can't necessarily say any of them are wrong. But, yeah, my dad, the doubters, people that had seen me at my worst.
And you're back now. You're feeling abandoned. You're feeling lost. You're still now sort of at the prime mentally with this hatred, this dehumanization. Was there an influx of Muslim refugees or people coming into Muncie? Is that, or was there always a community there?
Well, yeah. See, that's the thing. There always was a community there. They never stood out to me really. With Muncie, you know, it had been a mailing address for many years, really, more than anything, because I had broken time. I had 2 years between the Marine Corps and the Army, where I tried to be a civilian. That was a bad idea. I'm lucky I made it out alive. But I joined the Army, and I had already came to Muncie. I came to Muncie to fight. I was trying to make it as a kickboxer. And then I slowly got into the cage. And, you know, because of drinking and womanizing, that never panned out. I ruined myself. You know, I was good. Man, I don't know if I was UFC good, but I was good.
I get it.
You know, And but yeah, so I killed myself that way. I lost that window. So I went into the Army. And they were more than happy to take me in. Took me in, and you know, they was like, I got, you know, hooked up with a really high speed unit, and you know, became an operator again. And man, it was off to the races. Did some great things, man. Some fun things. You know, it was hunting down war criminals in Bosnia in 04, right? And Afghanistan and in Iraq, and oh my gosh, it was incredible. But you know, now it's all gone, man. And it's like, hey, I have nothing. You know, I got money at the time. I had plenty of money, actually. You know, and so I didn't really need to do anything. So I have all this time to think now about all these people who ruined my life, ruined my destiny, stole it from me. Bam, I got some Muslims right here. I can take care of them. Do one last thing for my country. Make that stand that we are not going to take it anymore, right? So I took my time. I devised a plan. It's over the course of probably a couple of years, you know.
What was the plan?
To put a bomb together, simple bomb, and do my best to level the Islamic Center. When I first looked at it, when I first started doing the recon for it, they didn't have the location they have now. They were actually in a house that was right off of campus and was in a residential area. So I slowly kept with the process of putting a bomb together, but waited, because I didn't like that idea, because there was too many Americans around. I didn't really want to hurt the Americans, right? Not that almost everybody inside the Islamic Center was actually an American. Yeah. So I backed off a little bit. Then they moved, and they kind of got this out of the way building. You know, it was still close to some other, and I knew there would be some residual harm that was going to happen, but I think it would be minimal. I tried my best to, as best I could, and the knowledge I had about explosives, to make this so it had as little impact on these other people as possible. And it just went into motion, full gear, and I was ready to just, all I had to do was, my plan was on a Thursday night, late night, I had a place for it. I already did that recon, and I was just going to set it down and wait for them to have their service the next day in the afternoon, sit across over at that bank, dial it in.
Do you remember exactly where you were when you got that impulse, when you got that idea? Do you remember how it started? I mean, was there a process that went from sort of an idea into, I'm actually going to execute this? And
honestly, I don't think so. I think it was just, this is what I'm doing. I mean, you know, okay. Ah, good idea. Let's do this. You know, kind of like when you're at the supermarket and you're checking out and you see, oh man, I really want that Twix bar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And
it was,
you get
that simple.
And that's what a lot of my shame comes into being. It's not the act itself, it's what went behind it that made it so this is what
easy.
I do, you know? Yeah.
Why did you look at them as the cause of you being in the situation that you were in?
I think it just had to do with my own personal experience with being overseas and fighting these Muslims, right? Having them try to kill me, you know? It just turned me against the whole group. It's like, yeah, so one tries to kill me, they all want to kill me. You know, is that mindset. Mm-hmm. So it's the basic premise of how prejudice builds, right?
Of course.
We see the actions of this one person because of the color of their skin or where they come from. They're all like that, right? And it just kept building, and they're all evil. Every one of them, even the babies.
Did you have experiences overseas where you saw you're fighting alongside of Muslims, or you saw something that you respect, or you did you have any experience before what we're going to eventually get to? You saw beauty within the Muslim faith?
Not the faith necessarily.
Or the people?
You should tell the story about that woman.
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, that's why I looked at you first. he normally does not like me to tell the story, but it's my explanation on where my hatred was.
Please. Yeah, no, I think it's important.
In Bosnia. So our main mission was there to go get war criminals, put them, hold on to them until somebody came and got them and transported them to The Hague, right? Okay? So like Milosevic, Karadzic, and all those guys, right? We never did get those. We actually ended up capturing a couple of Al-Qaeda guys. Because Bosnia happened at, I don't know if it still is, but it was an Al-Qaeda training ground. A lot of people didn't even know that.
Yeah.
It was hidden away. So anyway, I had this interpreter. But since 24/7, we're not hunting down war criminals, you know, where we have other stuff we need to do. So my my colonel decided, hey, Mac, he said, you're a charismatic guy. I'm going to send you on some PR duty. You're gonna give radio interviews. I was like, all right. So I'd go to these radio stations in Bosnia.
Yeah.
Well, I had to have an interpreter, right?
Yeah.
So it was a female, 20-something, right? Bosnian. And she ended up being actually my team's interpreter. And sweet girl, very pretty, but very, very European. And when I say that, it's not, it sounds like I'm being judgy, and I'm really trying not to. I'm just trying to put it into a frame of mind where a lot of your European Muslims are not as orthodox as, say, like Afghan Muslims, you know, or Saudi Muslims or something like that. They're a lot more just carefree, okay, about things. And that is in no way a judgment. It's just trying to give an explanation.
Understood.
You know, she didn't wear hijab. She went out, she dated guys, and, you know, her family was more orthodox than she was. She took my team to her house, and we met her family. Wonderful people. Wonderful people. Now, I'm saying this, remember that. And this girl, we had so much respect for her. She took care of us, you know, and we took care of her. To put it into a frame of mind, within Bosnia, and this is what caused such a problem for when they had the civil war and stuff, where there's Serbian villages within Bosnia.
Yep.
Okay. And we went into one of the Serbian villages to try to get some information. I sat down and met with the police chief there, and my interpreter's here. He's Serbian, she's Bosnian. Of course, I didn't know exactly what they were saying, but his tone and her reaction told me that he was not being very nice.
Right. Something was up.
I got up, pulled out my M4, pulled it up. Said, if you ain't got nothing nice to say, you shut the hell up.
Mm-hmm. Just you like tell him that.
And then because, because I was like, she's with me.
She's with you, yeah.
Right? Now, I like her, but I don't like, I hate her, right? But she's with me, I'm taking care of her, okay? Plus, I know without her, I probably not going to get out of town. And my friends asked me, we were sitting in the chow hall one day, and some friends I was with, we were sitting there eating, and we started talking about how much I hated Muslims, because these are part of the group that's like, dude, you need chill. They said, well, what about Sarah, man? You like Sarah? I said, dude, I do, man. She's great. I said, man, I do just about anything for her, but there's going to come a time when she got to go. I said, what do you mean? She's Muslim, dude. She got to go. I said, but because I do like her and I do respect her, I said, I hope I'm the one that's there to do it.
Wow.
Because I'll just put a 9 to the base of her skull and she'll go quick and painless. But she's still got to go.
Wow.
That's hatred, man. Yeah. I mean, you can't get any better explanation on the hatred that I felt in that way. Yeah. To actually have a desire to take the life of someone that I like, you know? That's been good to me. That's hatred. I wrestle with that sometimes because that's evil, man.
Yeah.
That's the foundation of evil. And I don't know. anyway, where were we at? We were...
Yeah, I get. When you talk about then when you were home and this plan, and we're getting there. I know this is difficult, but can you then? How far along in the plan did you get?
I was done. Just a matter of just picking a day. Yeah.
Did you build the bomb?
Huh?
You built the bomb?
Oh, yeah, I built it, yeah. I can't disclose what it was. FBI made me agree to that.
Yes, sir.
I was like, all right, that's cool, you know.
How long did you work on it?
It was a process of about 2 years, yeah, because I took my time. As silly as I think I am sometimes and as dumb as some of the decisions I think I make, that was a pretty good plan because I took my time, didn't raise any red flags, you know.
Was there ever, during that time that you were planning it, was there ever a doubt that it was going to go down? Was there ever?
I didn't think so.
No, it was definitely going to happen.
I was making it for a purpose, not just to make it. I mean, yeah, it's just.
And were there little drivers on a daily basis during that time when you would encounter folks of the Muslim faith, you know, in town? What would that do to you? Were you angry?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can you describe
it? I would go into stores, and I would be with my wife at the time, and I would just be embarrassing to her. Thank you. And it'd just be embarrassed. She would just be totally appalled sometimes by my actions because
you would say something.
Yeah, I'd go by and I'd see a woman in hijab. I'd say something disgusting to her. Just keep on walking, like, you know, like some people go, hi, how you doing? I'd be like, you know.
If something would happen, some sort of setback, some sort of frustration, did you immediately go to a place where it was like, it's them, it's their fault?
Oh, yeah. The whole, everything that was wrong with the world.
Can you give me an example of that?
You know, it's cold outside. It's a Muslim's fault. I mean,
it just makes no fucking sense.
I would say stuff like that.
Yeah, I would
literally say stuff like, you know, oh, the tornadoes. The Muslims did that.
Yep.
You know, come on, man.
Yep.
It's stupid.
But it's important. I mean, I think it's important to understand, you know, you're in such an unbelievable position to tell this story. And what a blessing that, like, these wonderful people came in your life and you are where you are now, because so few people who are blinded that are just being suffocated by that kind of hate can actually talk about it and then potentially reach others who are there, man. You know, that is how it works, you know, right? I mean, it's like it just becomes this thing where anything that goes on in your life, well, let's just put it into that hate funnel, because it's really like, I know, you know, it's something, again, not to get all artsy fartsy, but you know, one thing that they talk to actors about, one thing I know, easiest thing to do is play angry. It's the easiest thing to do. Easiest thing to do. Like you want to make the scene good. I could turn this thing over, kick this, you know, like start screaming. Anybody can do that.
Right.
But get to compassion, you know, love. I guess get me to the point of, you know, where things turn. Can you talk to me about, you know, walking in and how that happened and what that was about?
So, because of my daughter, who has, oh my God, I can't even put her in a category. She's just this very special person in my life, right? As, you know, the daddy-daughter relationship should always be a very special thing anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mac, how old was she then?
She was 7, maybe 8 at the time. She's a freshman in college now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because one of the things I was telling them is that, you know, a lot of those pictures that you see in the film are pictures that were taken before daddy-daughter dances.
Mm.
And that was a big deal. We always had a good daddy-daughter dance, which I was very happy. Mm. I was like, yeah, you know, I look forward to it, mm-hmm. right? But the little girl would never dance with me.
How come?
She was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
She sent me a text probably about a month ago apologizing for never dancing with me at the daddy daughter now. I said, well, that's okay, you can make it up at your wedding.
There you go.
Yeah, so
like,
you know, it's like that. Even though, you know, she's older and she don't have the same the time that she once had for dad, you know, because now there's boys and stuff, right? So I actually had to go to school one time because when she was in kindergarten, I told her that besides her dad, her grandfather, and her uncles, boys are stupid. She told some boy that he was stupid. And I had to go explain myself.
There you go.
So it was, you know, I mean, so we've always been close. But, you know, her reaction to my actions and seeing how disappointed she was in me.
Can you give me an example?
Well, you know, she came home and she asked about what she'd seen at school that day. This woman had come in and she was all covered, you know, ethnic Islamic wear, you know, hijab, and she was all covered up, dressed down to the floor and stuff. And, you know, and she didn't understand it, you know. And this is a beautiful thing about children. No prejudice. No bias.
Yeah.
You know, but even though I hated the way I did, I was very selfish about it. It was mine. I didn't want to share it with anybody. I was not promoting hatred. I did not want anybody to feel the way I did, you know, even though I guess it's going to happen anyway. Luckily, it has happened with this. But
Mac, what did you say to her?
I basically just started a spew of profanity, saying that I didn't want my family around those people, you know, the famous those people, right? And I was just so enraged and upset because I felt like a failure. Because I wasn't protecting my family. I had my family in the same room with terrorists. Mm. That's the way I looked at it, right? And
was there honest to goodness fear of that woman that she could hurt your daughter, or was it just hatred?
Well, yeah, there was some fear there. There was some fear. You know, I'm figuring, okay, well, if her son gets a bad grade, she's going to blow up school. You know, I mean, you know, stupid things I'm thinking, going through my head, just stupid. And
but you know better than that, right? I mean, I guess I don't mean it like that. I guess what the reason why I'm asking is for people who are in this kind of cycle. I mean, you've been at this point, you've been around the world. You know what a terrorist is. You know what the enemy is. The odds of that person actually being an enemy at that point are infinitesimally. I mean, the odds are super. But so there's something else that's making you say that, right? It's not the fear. There's no honest fear there.
Not really, no. Like, I knew it wasn't going to happen. Right. I mean, you know, could it?
But
I
guess it was just possible, it's a place. But it's a place to put whatever else you're feeling.
There you
put
go.
Put it in there. All the frustration.
It was
all
like
the,
an excuse.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I feel bad, so now I'm just going to take it out on everybody, and everybody's piece of crap, right?
I know you were getting. I want to finish what you were saying about your daughter, but just with that. You know, obviously, you execute this plan. You're never seeing her again.
I knew how this would end. You know, there's certain things you just don't get away with. Mass murder being one of them. It's going to happen. You're going to get caught, man. I don't, you know, and I knew that. I accepted that. As you know, I was already willing to die.
Yeah.
Because that's what I thought my destiny was.
Yeah.
I saw myself as doing the same thing, just a different storyline.
Yeah.
I was still dying for my country.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when she had said that, I saw that, whoa, hold on a second. First of all, it made me realize that for the first time, this involves more than just me.
Yeah.
Because I kept everybody out of it. You know, and that's one thing my ex-wife never got over, was the fact that she never knew. She was just kept in the dark and she felt like a fool, you know? Because nobody knew.
There are no buddies that you talk to. There's nobody. Yeah, hell yeah.
Everybody that knew me knew I did not like Muslims. Nobody ever like she had said, in a million years, never thought that this would be possible, mm-hmm. that I would do this. So with my daughter's reaction, it made me realize that, like I said, number one, this involves other people. Number two, they deserve an explanation. So I got to get this proof. I know the way I feel is right, but I got to get this proof. So that's what said, okay, the only way I'm going to get it, I got to go to the source.
What are you looking for?
Well, I wanted to get close to them. I wanted to get to know them a little bit, right? Because I wanted them to explain their faith, their culture, and in that would be why they hate and want to destroy America, right? Because they're not willing to just give that up, right? That's not something to just talk about openly, right? Excuse me. So when I went in there, I met with some people, very nice, you know, smiles. And
can you tell me what it was like the first time you walked? I mean, you had researched that building. Your reconnaissance. I mean, you know everything about that place. What was it like to actually walk in there? What was the first thing?
I laughed about it a few years afterwards because it was the first time I'd ever stepped foot in a mosque. Nobody wasn't shooting at me. Because a lot of times, like, you know, in different places I've been to, a lot of the insurgents and bad guys would hang out in the mosque because they knew that that building was supposed to be off limits for us. Unless we're getting shot at, right? Unless we're taking fire from that, and then it's sorry, you know? But so that was the first time nobody's shooting at me. I go into a mosque, and it's like, okay, where's everybody at? You know?
When you walked in, were you armed?
No. Fortunately, I had never purchased a firearm as a civilian. And I'm very happy for that because it was a time I probably would have used it. Yeah. But
you, when you walked in for the first time, and again, forgive me for this, but was the bomb built?
Oh yeah, it was done.
And so when you walked in, can you talk, who was the, do you remember the first person you saw?
Yeah. It was an African American guy.
Yeah.
Used to be a pro basketball player in the '70s, right? Great guy. He used to be the caller, the one to call the prayer, right? Wonderful person. And he smiled at me and said, can I help you? I said, yeah, I want you to teach me about Islam. He said, well, how long you got? I said, I got a couple hours. He said, we'll give it a shot. Right? And, you know, kind of thing. It's just conversation. So he gave me some literature and set me in the back of the prayer room where there's benches for, you know, people that are a little bit older, can't get up and down from the floor, or like me, I used to say, or after leg day, you know, it's a place to sit. And and I'm listening to the sermon, and I was like, oh man, this is good. That's good. That's good. That's good. Good sermon. They're just saying that because I'm here, right? And crazy things started going through my mind, like, oh man, I'm going to end up on Al Jazeera tonight with a sword to my throat. I already know I'm the only non-Muslim in this room. This is not good.
So you thought you were actually at risk?
Oh yeah. I didn't trust any of them for a little bit, at least a couple weeks, which still is crazy fast. But after the sermon, I got introduced to another guy, a little bit younger, closer to my age, and another African American gentleman. And super guy, super, me and him are still friends. He's actually in the film also. And he handed me a Quran. And he says, I want you to read this. Come back to me when you got questions, right? And that's what I tell all Muslims today. If somebody comes to you and they want to know a little bit more about Islam, man, you give them a Quran, ask them to read it, and come back and find you or another Muslim when you got questions about it. Man, that's the best way to do that, right? And so I did. And I was like, I was happy because I'm like, man, I thought I'd just been handed a holy grail, man. Wow. I got all the proof right here. Mm. Bam. And they're going to explain it to me.
You thought it was going to be in there like all Americans must die. Or...
Yeah. And there are things in there that bring skepticism because you read them. And if you just read them, you're like, oh, my God. You know, it says that. But then when you get the explanation behind it, it's just like entries in the Bible, man. Mm. You know, when you get explanations behind it, then you're like, oh, okay, I get it. So I'm like, okay, well, that's not it. I'm going to keep reading. And so I did, man. I read it, and I looked over some things. And as I kept going, things would highlight, and things would come up, and light bulbs would come on. Because my impression of what Muslims were the ones that were shooting at me a couple years back. That was what Muslims were to me. People who flew planes into buildings. That's what Muslims were to me. But I'm reading their book. This is their book, man. I didn't write this. And it's telling me the complete opposite of everything that I had seen them do. So obviously, never been called an intelligent person, but hey, I got a few IQ points. I'm thinking, whoa, obviously they're not a good source of an example of what Islam is. I need to find somebody who is more of what this book is saying, right? Because like Christianity, you know, if you're a Christian, you try to live your life as close to the Bible as you can. Well, same thing in Islam, right? And they're not. Those people are not.
Those people overseas that were shooting.
Yes, yes. They're not. And I know there's other things that make that up. I know there's other, you know, there's a lot more than just they just want to kill Americans. There's more to it than that. And so I don't want to sell them short, right? Because I understand they of what their belief and what they're doing is right, you know. And in a lot of ways, they're no different than I am. Mm-hmm. I was there doing what I thought was right, mm-hmm. and they were there doing what they thought was right. So, you know, and then I started thinking, I'm like, well, my example of the people in this book are right here. And that's when I started getting to know them a little bit more and better. And then I finally get introduced to BB, you know. And, I mean, beautiful woman. Inside out, she is just, I mean, I have had non-Muslims tell me that they see the presence of God in her, mm-hmm. just because of her actions, her attitudes, the way she takes on a task, you know, resettlement of Afghan refugees in Muncie, you know, her foundations of helping women and kids in Afghanistan with education and medical needs and stuff like that. I mean, you know, one of the examples that's given is she's the Mother Teresa of the Islamic community. Mm. You can't use a better example, man. Mm. I mean, it's impossible. And with me, you know, and I've told her and I've told, you know, a few people, but there's not enough ink in this world to write the thank you notes that her and that community deserve, wow. from me, because wow. they saved my life, they saved their own lives, and they saved the life of the community.
Can you talk about when he first came into your life, what you thought of first, and what that experience was?
Okay. Yeah, this is, I mean, it's amazing how you interact with different peoples in your life. I have been totally blessed with the background that I have dealt with people similar to Mac and other people who had issue, lived in refugee camp for 6 years and coming here as a refugee. And being my husband and I as the parent of the community, we have dealt a lot of the problems were always come to us. Mm. And in his medical practice, I was totally blessed, just to give you a little bit of that. When Mac came to the Islamic Center, obviously my husband met him first. He was on the men's side, and another brother who met him in, the first time. Then he came home and he told me about him, that there's a guy in the mosque. I mean, he was a little bit, you could see like a little concern.
Right.
And with his concern that I said, okay, I mean, what do you do? And he just said, this is what he talked to him. And he met
and at this point, it was just a man who was curious the about his, that's it.
No other. Yes, got it. Exactly. Got it. This was a man in there. He looked different. He looked a little concerned and blah, blah, blah. And they're just like, I'd say, okay, then, I mean, what did you say? This is what I tried to talk to him and calm him down, just like I would do with any of my patients, or he seems to be a little concerned.
That's cool. Isn't that the day that he hugged you, right?
Yeah.
When you first walked in.
That's how, like, you know, I think the way he was telling me, like, you know, I know he was sitting there with concern, the way he looked like, you know, and he went and talked to him, and I think he sat down, like, just to really, I mean, they were sitting together on the floor.
No, like, I was on the couch.
You're on the couch, he sat on the floor and just told, yeah. like really get his attention, like right in front of him and holding his knee, like, are you okay? And trying to like, yeah, uh-huh. like, you know, just like being like, are you okay? just looking at him and talking to him and like that he really cares.
And what do you think?
Obviously
he sensed, right? Like he sensed that there was something broken in something.
There was something, yes, exactly, going on in his life that he is a concern. And he wanted to just talk to him and give him all his attention, like just sit down. Usually my husband is a crazy busy man.
Yeah.
And he's always in rush even if he comes to sermon. But he saw the concern. Mm. He saw that he was like vulnerable. He needed some attention to talk to him.
I know it's in the film, but can you just describe what that felt like? Odd.
Having another man hug me, I guess, and especially in the way that he did it. It was emotional. It was caring. These people want me dead. You know, it was confusing, right?
Here is a man, a doctor, and coming and sitting and asking him questions in caring and loving way. I think that was how it got impacted. And I know Mac could talk about that more, how he explained it, but the way my husband explained it mm-hmm. to me, I wish he was here, he was on call mm-hmm. this week, but that's how like he said he explained it. I said, good. Then the next week that I go to the mosque and I tell him that I want to meet that guy, see if he's there, because I think he came again the next Friday or whatever time it was. Yeah. I don't know the exact time frame. And I said, I would like to meet this guy. And I went to the center, and there is a library between the guys and the woman. We both use the library. And I'm standing in the library. He's there with some guys talking. And then I finally say hi to him, and how are you? With just respect and just kind of welcome him. Very naturally, normal
sure,
situation.
Sure.
And then I went home, obviously. I mean, as I'm always a rushing and a busy person. But then I think the situation was getting to different level. I mean, I was hearing people a little bit more concerned why this guy is coming. And
what were the concerns?
The concern that this guy could be coming, doing something to us.
That was that because people sensed it. Because
I mean, obviously, as you know, the little bit of background. I mean, looks like the hate started from the 9/11 was even in that time. I mean, so much has been happening that the 9/11 was by a Muslim. And every time there was a Muslim name, any bomb explosion, we were scared that, I hope it doesn't, this is not a Muslim name.
Yeah.
They may not be Muslim, but at least even a name
yeah.
is going to affect us.
Yeah.
It's going to be hurting us.
Yeah.
And having all this history and this unfortunate situation that we're dealing with, we were scared. And
he kind of looks scary, right?
Oh, he looked very scary. He looks scary. And then being minorities, I mean, any of us anymore in throughout the United States, people are scared. It's very unfortunate. We shouldn't be. But then minorities, Muslim, and then especially with all this negative news, then you're scared. Once I invited them over, then you know them. Then you have that special relation with those people.
Of course.
And you understand who they are and what they need, or it's part of the community. That's what I do. I said, I haven't done that, and he was telling me. And that's what I said, like, I have to set a time, and I invite him over. And those people who are concerned, they call me specifically, that you guys are in this leadership, you and your husband, you need to make sure that we're safe.
Here was this person that was different, was new, was coming around, asking these questions. There were mm-hmm. some concerns.
Yes.
And you said, okay, great. I know what I have to do. I need to invite him in and open up and bring him over. And then these same people that were having those concerns, they came to you and they said, I don't think that that's a good idea. Is that yeah. is that right?
Yes. That's what I mean. They say, are you crazy, Bibi? I say, no, I would like to invite you as well.
Were you suspicious at all? Were you...
To be honest, I personally was maybe a little concerned. I could be, because I say from what we hear from news, I gave up those news after 9/11 when I started my nonprofit. But I was still concerned, but not really. To be honest, maybe my faith and my background helped me.
How did your faith and background help you in not being afraid where other people were?
Okay. Yeah, I think my dearest father, who my God bless his spirit, was he had even home for homeless people in our village. And people, there was no stranger in our house. The people will come and they needed a place to spend the night and they will stay there. And then my mother will send food in the evening and I will always be the first one to deliver it. Coming from there, I was not like, didn't have fears. Like I said, oh, these people are poor people. They need help. We should be helping.
Sure.
Then growing up with that and then also coming to a refugee camp and assisting in many, many ways, volunteering there, giving IV shots to people. I learned from my father and baking breads for them and helping out. And that also, again, is part of our faith too. I mean, to help others, you know, in all religion, neighbors are respected,
yep.
That we should be helping each other.
Yep.
All religions say we have to be brother and sisters.
Yep.
We should be helping each other. And growing up with that, that kind of was the way of life for me personally. And then again, when you see the person with vulnerability, like who needs more of your attention, I think that's what my life commitment is, that successful people are successful. But the people who need our help, we should be giving them more attention and help them more.
When you came in contact with it, how did your faith or your upbringing serve you? Or how did you deal with it?
I think I have been totally blessed and I have a positive, I always see good in people, whoever they are. That's my, God has blessed me with that. And if I did come across, I try to overcome it with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to reach to those people to help. Like, for example, I was in peace and study, conflict and peace class, and the professor was talking about the hate and the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. We were talking about it, and I had two students sitting beside me like, oh, my parents hate Muslim. And they both said it. I said, why? Because they watch Fox News and they don't know any better. I said, I would love to invite your parents because I feel sorry for them to live with that hate,
sure.
And die in their head. And if I can invite them over and comfort them and make them better understanding of who we are instead of what has been negativity spread, probably that will help them. But just by saying that, you know, that's how when I even had Mac in that class too, and as a student in that time, and that had like a lot of impact, and I gave him even more respect. I said, oh, becomes a Muslim Student Association president. And just giving more of that, respect and responsibility to mm-hmm. make him part of us. Mm-hmm.
They ended up in the same college. They ended up in the same college
In the same college.
Actually.
We were in the same class.
And after he...
But like my impression of bringing him home and those people are negative about to go back to that.
Yeah, please.
And it was just very, I mean, without even thinking, I just wanted to make sure my communities, those members who are concerned are safe, or they understand better. It was all about understanding.
Sure.
And we invited him over and we had dinner and invited those people too. I mean, not everybody, there were certain people very concerned. And I mean, certain people probably didn't pay attention. But anyway, when we had that dinner together after he enjoyed the food, he finished everything I cooked, obviously. I thought that he might not like it, like he thought about his new father-in-law, that he's not going to eat your food. I said, don't worry, he will like it.
There you go.
He loved the food. And after I sat down, they're all talking about different things and maybe in life. But when I sat down and had the tea, I say, brother, Rick, that's what I call him, Rick. And
him?
Yes,
okay.
Brother Rick, that's what I call him. I said, what were you thinking? Because by then he's Muslim. But even more concerned when he even came to Islam. People were saying that, oh, he converted because he has a plan. And he's going to fulfill his plan continuously. He wants to know us more. And that's why when I said, why were you thinking like that? And then he explained to me the situation, that why was he thinking? Why was he planning to do this? And why this whole thing was affected because of his history. And if he met people like myself, then he would have not thought about it this way. Because all he knew is, in the war, in the occupations, different places, traveling, was that these were enemies.
Right.
And seeing those enemies in the his own community where his beautiful daughter is growing up with these terrorists or these Muslims is going to be a problem. And that's how he saw it.
The first time you walked into that home to go eat, your plan was still to kill everyone in there.
The very first time. Because it was just, was just.
But that's like enormously powerful.
Yeah.
So can you then talk about, if you can describe it, how did it start to break down? I mean, the food was good, right? I mean, the food was great. But was there something about that night specifically, or was it just like water? Was it gradual and fluid?
So, you know, one thing is I always tell people that BB's cooking is the best in the world. And a matter of fact, she brought cookies. You have to have the cookies.
Okay.
It's our bribe. It's what we use.
There you go.
I tell people I weighed 190 pounds before I went to BB's house. But it's part of their culture. It's part of the hospitality that, you know, this is, and I was not oblivious to that from being in their countries, but you know, you don't go to a home without leaving with having something to drink or food in your mouth. It just doesn't happen, right? And they had never shunned from that. That's the way they've lived their life to everybody. So the I was not necessarily taken aback by that because I already knew that's their culture. But I was waiting. I looked around. They have this nice house, this big house. You know, of course, they raise a family. Saber's a physician. They have nice things. Well, they worked for them. They have nice things. They worked for and they have them. And I'm looking for things that just like stand out. And nothing really did. They're your neighbor. They're nothing. As time went on, it just nothing stood out that these are bad people. They're just plain pleasant. That's the best way to put it. There's plain pleasant people that are enjoying their lives and trying to help others enjoy their lives.
When was the first time you became aware of what his plan was or where he was at or that he was walking around with that kind of hatred?
To be honest, timeline, I don't remember, but I was hearing the rumor for quite some time. As I say, I'm a pretty busy person.
Sure, sure.
It was happening for a while, and I don't know the date that he had come. And then the second time that I met him in the center, and then the time frame that I invited him over because the rumor was getting bigger and
what
bigger.
What was the rumor that you heard?
That he is planning to hurt us, to do the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but was I that, heard about the bomb.
But that rumor, that was based on people's fear, people sort of saying he looks a certain way. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, I imagine you revealed to the community, you know, how did that happen?
Yes.
What made you decide to reveal that? And where, you know, how was that received?
Well, it was at BB's house.
You confronted him, right?
Yeah.
That happened at our house. Yes.
Yeah, it was
exactly.
When she confronted me.
Yes.
And, you know, I
think that's what things kind of change. I mean, I know the welcome in the center, the greeting and the hugging of the legs or giving comfort. I think that was the time that he shared with me. When I asked him, I said, this is what I heard. Is that true? Like, you know, you're hurting.
And who was BB to you? Who was she to you at that moment when she confronted you?
That's a good question. Well, she was more my friend than my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I was falling in love with her family, who actually, to be honest with you, they are my family now. That you know, I still have a strange relationship with my own biological family. They're my family. That's why it doesn't bother me so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recently just got married, right? Saber, perform, because, and she's a devout Christian, right? We have same mindset. That's why it works so well. We had a Christian in an Islamic ceremony. Sabir performed the Islamic ceremony. Wow.
Bibi's husband.
Yeah, Bibi's husband. Mm-hmm. And she did the cooking. Wow. I was going to have it catered. I was going to have it catered because I wanted her to, because I know she's always on the go. She's working, right, all the time. And I just wanted her to enjoy it and relax. She kind of got a little, Stephanie told me that she kind of got her feelings hurt. and I was like, well, fine, go ahead. I mean, you know, I just wanted her to sit and enjoy it, but you know.
But this confrontation that you talk about, can you talk about what, like, the tenor of the it was just, hey, I'm hearing this. What's the truth?
Yes. I think it was beautiful. The way I remember the whole, we are sitting on a big dining table, like 10 of us. I don't know, this is 10 chairs.
So it was public. It was in front of people.
Oh, yeah. No. Because, I mean, the concern was there.
Yeah.
And these people, I mean, like, maybe they were not even afraid to even talk to him, some of them. That was like, then when I sat down, I'm all about breaking ice, okay? If there is a conflict between some of the community leaders, I invite them together and I just kind of like, so let's talk about our community.
I love it.
And I love my community. And that's exactly what I did. As soon as I sat down, I say, okay, what are you thinking?
Are you trying to
kill us? It broke the ice and everybody started a conversation. He openly, and he's a very open person, and he openly shared it with everyone. Everybody's listening. I could see the reaction of those people, their faces. But it was how it ended. It was just beautiful.
How did it end?
Because the understanding came to a different level, because he expressed it very simply that this was my plan, but I'm thinking differently, meeting you guys, how you guys greet me, how you made me understand, even the humanity part. I think that the end of the dinner time, I think the situation was different. And then, of course, then continuously with the community and more activities. As I say, sometime I will cook dinner. I'll say, okay, Brother Mac, you can stop by. I have food for you. You come and pick it up. And just to deliver it to him home, mm-hmm. because I know he would need that. And he was by him. Oh, no, Dana was there and Emily. Mm-hmm. And I would just give him extra food because she was working. Dana became my good friend. And
that's,
Emily.
That's Mac's,
ex-wife, Dana. And she was my good friend. We had a great time. She worked used to in Macy's store, and I love Macy's store, and I always chat with her every time I go. But anyway, that's how it was kind of ended very nicely with that evening. I mean, I personally was in peace, that I was happy that I was able to invite these people and invite him to just talk to them.
Did the plan end that night?
Oh, it started ending.
It started ending, but yeah. I mean, was there any...
The hatred was gone, and it was gone quickly, which has raised a lot of questions.
Questions?
Like, you were going to blow this place up, kill all these people. 2 months later, you're okay, and everything's peachy king. You know, that's crazy.
But, yes, but what does that tell us? Like, what does that tell us about all these people out there who are being led by their fears, their hatred? There's something to that, because I found that a lot. It's like, once you make that little shift, you're actually, well, what the hell? I can't believe that. Of course, that was so stupid. And
so, you know, it had a lot to do with, of course, I was in search of something, and I think her son Zaki said it best, that I was missing. Being a part of something bigger than myself. I think he probably hit the head or the nail right on the head right there. That was it. They gave me a second chance. What happened after that with my conversion, that really, it was just, that was my own personal journey thing, and that it was all God's plan. I truly believe that. The fact of getting out of the hatred, you know, I've been called a hero several times, a lot. Bibi's the hero. My daughter is the hero. I was just a tool, or just a tool in a cog, man. Really, you know. They're the ones that created the change, you know. And it was because of their actions, because of their love for me as a human. Well, yeah, for me as a human being, you know, and that's what I was missing. I did not have love for humanity. I did not have love for human beings. You know, it was so much easier, like you had said earlier, so much easier to hate and be mad than it is to be nice and show love. It's so much easier. And I took the easy way out, and that's what I was doing. They changed my mind. They made me see life as something else. And that's why this film is such a call to action, mm-hmm. because it makes you think. Change is possible, man. Yeah, 2 months. Wow, that's crazy. I can't explain that. God's plan. That's all I can say, man. I know that's a kind of a cop-out answer, but that's all I can say.
At some point, you decided, hey, I want to join this faith.
Well, and that had to do with reading the Quran.
Okay.
And getting the explanations. You know, coming across certain verses and certain things. And one of my favorite verses is, or actually it's considered a chapter, even though it's very short, explains to me when I read it, it explained coexistence. And basically what it does is it tells, I don't believe the way you believe. You don't believe the way I believe. I will never believe the way you believe, and you will never believe the way I believe. You go your way, I go mine. That's it. Done deal. And I'm reading that, and I'm thinking about these extremists, and I'm like, wait a minute. It's telling the exact opposite of their actions. And I love this. I do. This has hit me, and I love this. I want to be a part of it.
And I think when he came to the center, at one point that my husband told me, that's again his side of the story, that now he's ready to convert. And I remember he's told me that he said, no. You keep reading, and this is not time. I need to know more. You need to educate yourself more before you do that. I think he told him that in the center, and send him maybe with additional books, keep reading more about it, and send him home.
Mac's a passionate guy. When he gets into something, he gets into
it. He gets it.
What it is, the story I hear, because you know the whole, you know how you're forced to convert and all that, all the horror stories that we hear and everything like that. So it's funny. So I actually go to the masjid, the center, the mosque, and I go there with the intent that Friday to make my conversion, mm-hmm. to say Shahada, your declaration of faith, right? Mm-hmm. To say that. And I go up to Sabr, and I think it was Dr. Benkatu was standing next to him. I think it was earlier founding brother, right? Mm-hmm. He was all part of all that. And they're standing next to each other, and I tell him, I says, I'm ready to be a Muslim. And they just stood there, and they looked at me. They looked at each other. And they look back at me and they go, no. And I never forget that, because I'm like, well, so much for that convert or die thing, huh? Wow. And they said, brother, you have much more to learn. And I says, don't we all? And they looked at each other again and they're like, he got us. Mm. All right, come on. Wow. Yeah. So that's
wow.
Yeah. So. That's always been a funny story, because they said, nah, I don't think so.
Was there any resistance to him in the community?
I think there was maybe some little concern. Some people, and I know we're a human being, and we do have suspiciousness and concerns.
Of course.
That something could happen. And especially when this became like, you know, when he did a short video, and when it became revealed to those people, say, see, Bibi, I told you that this guy was scary and this is what he planned to do. We were kind of suspicious of that. And I say, yes, I know. But then again, when we were doing this to help him, and then even with this video and this documentary, some people were still uncomfortable. I say, I think, you know, this God knows best. Again, this is our beautiful faith and our beautiful community and humanity that we should be helping each other. I think this is a great way of bringing other people to the center, yeah. and becoming even the president of the center, the first woman in the last, in the 40 some years, I took it. I mean, I was nominated several times, but I said, I'm extremely busy. As I'm all about breaking the ice, I said, for future girls or women, I have opportunity, I accepted it, then that could give a chance to other women in the future. And then with that said, I said, okay, I was blessed to be able to facilitate and help out. And if you don't share this message with each other, it will never, we will never get there. And our mission is to share, and our mission is to help each other. And I think that's why I explained to the members that this is how we need to see it. I mean, we all have a different level of faith and connections, but some people are pretty scared.
Yeah.
And I think after that, he became, as I say, part of the community. As I gave him responsibility, I mean, I know he became the MSA president. And when we lost the president, I was at that time community coordinator on the board. And then, obviously, the president, I was still doing a lot of the work even when he was the president. We had different president. But when he stepped down, then we, our bylaw of the center said that when MSA president, because he was the MSA president, would if the president stepped down, he can fill in as temporarily. And that happened. And then he was telling.
So Mac was the Muslim Student Association president. And so president. when their president yes. stepped down, he became president of the mosque.
Yeah.
The guy who wanted to blow it up became president.
And yeah. then he was telling me, he said, I don't know if I can do this. I'd say, you know, it's in our bylaw. This is your chance. It's God's plan. Take it, brother. I will do all the work. I will help you till we find somebody. But anyway, that's what the situation, as I say, it's...
And so now the community, I mean, this is your community. I mean, now
These are
all your... I mean, there's...
Absolutely.
Loving,
not only that, he became the president, of course, for the 6 months, and then I took over. Then he asked, really, we were looking for president, and he said, why don't you take it? You're doing the work anyway. He nominated me, and anonymously, obviously, people had wanted me before even, but anyway... When that happened, and then he became like more part of the community after being a president and taking more responsibility. Whenever I have an event, I'll text him, Brother Rick, would you please do this or do that? Would you please be there earlier in the event? You know, sometimes I would even ask a police to be there when people had fears before. In our program, I talked to the mayor's office, they would send the police. But when he became part of the community and everybody got so comfortable with him, everybody loved him so much, then he became our policeman. He'll be standing outside and just till everybody gets in. Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
We were just grateful for that.
It was funny, though, when I was president, people would come up to me with questions. I ain't have a clue, right?
Yeah.
I go, that's a BB question, man.
You got to
ask her.
I
have a clue.
Yeah.
We're working. We're helping each other. Yeah. He helped me many ways. We were blessed to have him. And, of course, it's a mutual thing, you know. It always takes two to make something happen. And it was both of us and the whole community. We're very blessed. And, of course, somebody that I know, this amazing guy who has the courage and the wisdom and the knowledge to call all the way from New York to Muncie, Indiana, to ask for the story that it was important for his mission, and explaining his situation to me, that how he has gone through this. And I said, oh, Jewish guys coming to Muncie and doing a documentary? I said, wow.
On Muslims?
I was really like, to be honest with you, even like with Muslim, you know, unfortunately the history. And they say, like, oh, we have some conflicts because of the Middle East or whatever. You know, like, there is some tension. And I said, this guy is coming to do this for us? This is really, it touched my heart.
That's beautiful.
And then I said, okay, even though I'm sick, I just came out of the coma. And God gave me a second chance.
When I reached out to her, I couldn't find her for a long time because I wanted to make this film. And finally I found out she had been in a coma. Were you considered dead for a moment or something?
Oh yeah, God gave me a second life. They were beating my heart for 6 minutes. It was stopped to bring it back to beating and put me on a ventilator for six days.
So I couldn't find her, but finally I did. And then I recovered. And she said, you know, and she was like, this, we need to tell this story now. You know, because she was like, like, I have a second chance. Yeah. And she was like, of course, come, we need to tell this story. Yes. And so when we came and interviewed her and filmed last summer, you know, she was still really sick, but she like, she was still, she cooked for the film crew. Yeah. She was like taking care of us, just led us into the community. And we were able to make this film because of Bibi.
Yeah.
Why this story specifically? Just talk about your relationship with it and how you feel like what you've learned and how you've grown.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up facing a lot of anti-Semitism. I don't think there's any difference. Hate is hate, right? People that Mac hated Muslims, it's the same thing, right? So I wanted to tell a story about that showed that hate is wrong. Mm-hmm. And this was a great story. I mean, guy comes to a mosque, wants to blow it up, and ends up, you know, becoming part of the family of the mosque and becomes the president of the mosque. Yeah. I mean, it was like, I can't think of a better story as an example of what is
How did
possible.
You hear about it?
I read about it in a newspaper article.
From Muncie?
It was a local paper, and it was, because Mac was starting to talk about his story, and I think he had given a speech at Michigan State or something, and something like that, I can't remember, and I read this article, and we were like, we gotta make this film. But then we couldn't find Bibi because she was in a coma.
Yeah.
And then, but then when we found her, came and it was just the perfect story for this moment because I don't know about you, but I've been depressed. I mean, I think this is why you do this podcast, but like, it's a rough time right now, you know, like when you look around and there's so much division and people aren't talking to each other and there's no connection. And this story was about like, what can happen if we actually talk to each other, if we are open to each other, if we're kind and compassionate to each other. And I felt like I had to tell it. And these two people are incredible. Yeah. I mean, the fact that like they're sitting here and they're friends. Like,
yeah, family. Yeah,
they're like family. Yeah, and he wanted to kill her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like she forgave him. And now they're, you know, it's... you couldn't, I think someone said like, if this was a Hollywood movie pitch, it'd be terrible because no one would believe
Nobody
it.
Nobody would believe it, yeah.
You know, but it's just, the story just blew me away.
Yeah. If you could, I imagine you've been asked this before, man, but I'm just wondering, you know, if right now you could go talk to yourself in the height of the hatred, in your lowest moment when you're devising this plan, maybe it was before, What would you say to that man?
To be honest with you, I mean, there's a lot of me that probably will never change as far as the way I am direct about things. I don't think I'd say a lot. I'd probably punch myself straight in the throat, to be honest with you. I mean, there's really nothing else to say. Fair because enough.
He's a military,
you know,
guy. He takes action.
You got
immediately.
You got to stop it, man. You got to stop this hatred. You got to... as a whole, I mean, you know, I want to create change. I want to get people to open up and to understand each other. I can't do it by myself. Mm-hmm. I can't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why I'm so thankful for Josh and for Bibi, of course. But, you know, for this film to be there, because this shows that it's possible. And people aren't looking at it like, oh, I'm not going to make a difference. I've already made a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that. One of the things when the first short film came out years ago that Josh had put together, you know, there was a lot of comments. Mm-hmm. And you know this. People always have hateful things to say, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But this one comment in particular, man, I will never forget this. Very colorful language because he talks a lot like I used to, right? And... but he said, if a tough guy like you can change the way he thinks about things, I guess I can too.
There you go.
Bam, that's it, man. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
That made it all worth it.
That's right.
That one time.
That's right.
Because now he's gonna act this way, and he's gonna think about things. And when he sees somebody spouting off, he's gonna correct him. He's gonna step in, and then it's a domino effect. That's right.
You know, I had a lot of issues with violence as a young man. I got in some real trouble, and I had to make some big change. And I think, you know, the change is scary a lot because you're getting rid of a big part of your identity, and you don't know what to fill it with. And you got to start filling it with all this good food, with BB's food, right?
Yeah.
You got to, like, you know, part of your love for him, what I'm seeing, is the fact that he does take action. Is the fact that he is a man who speaks his mind. Yes. He is a man who will defend you if need be. He is a man that can stand in front of that mosque and keep you safe, and you know he will do that.
Yes.
I guess I'm wondering, like, what is your relationship now with violence? What is your relationship to it? Is there any circumstances that would cause you to act violently now?
Well, you know, I do, because I'm just not that way anymore. You know, I live a nonviolent life.
What would you say to yourself after you punch yourself in the throat?
Get up. Now we can have a conversation.
There you go.
and talk this out and try to say, hey, you know, no, you're wrong. And here's how you're wrong. And this is the way we need to do, because this right now, it's about longevity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're slowly growing as a society, and we're slowly moving towards imploding on ourselves. You know, I mean, our own history. You know, January 6th, look at that. Are you serious? Wow, I was so ashamed, right? That happens. And the reason it happened is because hatred has become in style. You know,
it's the easiest thing to jump into,
and it's like
the most ignorant. You don't need to know
cool,
anything.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, man, look at them. I hate them people. Man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. On all sides, no matter who you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think what I was gonna add to that, like you mentioned earlier, like we have a saying in our culture that it's easier to make everybody upset in a minute, but it takes a lot of time and energy investment to make everybody more people happy.
Beautiful.
And I think with his situation, I mean, like, even though that he is the action person, that could go either negative or positively, but the blessing is to take your that kind of character of actions and making a difference, to use it in a positive
way
that will benefit your society. I mean, that's also a blessing to have that.
And for you, I wonder, I'm curious, mm-hmm. the instinct to open up your home to him, it's a mm-hmm. part of who you are, it's a part of your father's culture, mm-hmm. your culture, it's always been mm-hmm. with you. If you knew of his plan when you opened up the your house to him, would you have still opened up your house to him?
Absolutely. I think by meeting him in the center, I could see that vulnerability in him,
mm.
and what my husband told me, his medical knowledge, absolutely. I would have helped him regardless who that person was, within my ability to comfort him, to make him understand, regardless who he is.
When you disassembled that bomb, or whatever you did with it, I know you probably can't talk too much about that. Where were you in the process? I mean, had you already gone? Do you remember when exactly you took that action?
Yeah. So it was right before I took Shahada, made my declaration of faith, became a Muslim. I started taking everything apart. But, you know, again, for safety reasons, you can't just, like, all right.
Right.
You know, so and there were some things that had to be disposed of in a certain way. And they were. Everything was legit, man. You know, stuff that didn't matter got trashed, and other stuff got taken places, you know. And that was what was funny, because when the FBI came, there was no evidence, because it was after the fact.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was I know this is off topic. I got to say this. When they came to the door and introduced themselves or who they were, I looked them straight in the eye and said, "What took you so long?" What an idiot.
That's amazing.
Well, what are you guys?
Yeah, where you been, man?
But I mean, with that, as you know, not only hate crimes, but you know, these mass killings and these kids who are these people are going, these mass shootings, you know, it's happening more and more and more and more. But what's your feeling about that? I mean, what's your feeling? I mean, you're a person who clearly now leads with heart and love and community and positivity. But I mean, you were so close to that. You were so close to that. And do you feel like each one of these people, do you feel like potentially they could be brought out of it?
Absolutely. And here's the sad thing, and this is, you know, I'm a Trump best. I'm feeling soapbox here. This is my subject right here. Uh-huh. And you know, the thing is that, you know, we blame, as a society, we blame politicians, we blame doctors, we blame whoever, right? That, well, this happened because of this. No, it's your fault. I had a brother come to me in the masjid one time, and he said, Brother Rick, it's been a while since 9/11, and we proved that we're really not bad people now. You know, it was a few years after 9/11 and stuff. He said, why do Americans still hate us? He said, I don't understand. I said, oh, that's an easy answer, man, but you're not going to like it. He said, well, what? I said, it's your fault. He goes, what do you mean it's my fault? I didn't do anything. Aha, you didn't. That's the problem, right? Not enough people are doing what they need to do in order to cut this problem off. Mm. Us as human beings are lazy. I mean, we just are by nature. We always look for the easy way out. I mean, we just do. Not that that's bad. It's just that's what we do. Like BB was saying, love takes effort. Hatred and being mad doesn't. That's why I tell people, I says, you see the news, you don't like the news? Good, change it.
There you go.
It's your fault. Don't blame it on politicians. Don't blame it on the law. Don't blame it on, you know, the justice system. You know, we know those things are broke. We know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. This is supposed to be a country by the people, for the people.
That's right.
Be the people, man. Right. Be the people.
So when you even look at the example that you used with that one brother that came to you and said that, if you're walking around thinking everybody hates you, what is that going to keep you from doing? It's going to keep you from engaging. It's going to keep you from sitting down. It's going to keep you from having a meal with somebody different than you, having a conversation, being like, hey, man, what can I learn from you? What can you learn from me?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really I think that's really wise and you know, great. A huge part of why this film is so important.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. And I think with anything in life, whether it's in our personal life, whether it's with neighbor, it does take investment, that I strongly believe in that. And anything we do, we still have to sit down and resolve it through talking, understanding,
yep,
respecting. That's the solution. That's what's missing in our humanity, unfortunately. We know this conflict is there for years and years. All sides are suffering, not just only one side. We're all affected.
Yeah.
We're all suffering. I think it's always we need to sit down, and it has to be done through conversation and care and love in order to make a better world for all of us to live in, for our future, for our grandchildren. I mean, that's how I see it. It has to be a sitting down session and understanding.
And there's no, and to you in your philosophy, there's no point that's too far.
No.
You know, there's nothing that you can't come. He was all the way at that point. You're saying you still would have opened up your home for him. And that's beautiful. And I can see it in both of you and in your connection. I can very much see it in your film. You know,
it's,
you know, so a reporter asked me the other day, she said, so I get this film is about America and it's, you know, it shows that you guys can come together. She's like, she was an Israeli reporter. And she said, but what, you know, how is this film relevant to Israelis? And I was just like, it's relevant to everybody. It's relevant to Israelis, Palestinians, Republicans, Democrats, like the people that live in the next house who's, you know, your tree is growing over into their property line. It's relevant to anyone who's just not seeing eye to eye and isn't talking to each other. When we finished the film, we had a sneak peek screening at Bibi's mosque. And because we wanted them to see the film before everyone else. And, you know, we showed the film. I was a little nervous. Mac was there. He was nervous, I think. And when it was over, people applauded. They loved it. Mm-hmm. And one guy stood up and he said, I just want to say one thing. He said, every American needs to watch this film. And
yeah, he's a family doctor.
That's our goal. It's like, how do we just need to get everyone to see this? Because it's important. I think it will change the way people think.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
This country will become a third world if you don't really feel not conscious.
Yeah.
We are not taking care of this. We have shooting every single day and we're losing lives. And we're just sitting and not doing anything about it. And that's what I feel. I mean, I'm sure we're trying our best to do something about it, but it needs to be done more.
Yeah.
More drastic change.
Yeah.
I see change happens through actions and I wanted that change. I hope I can witness those changes in my life that we don't hear these shootings happening in our country or throughout the world.
Yeah, it was just something.
And I like that way, that direct Marine Corps way of putting it where it's your fault. I like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you guys, I really appreciate you guys coming. Yeah. This has been beautiful and very much, I think, at the heart of what we're trying to do with this. So I it's a real honor to have you guys here. Real honor. And
nothing for ourselves, it's all for all
absolutely.
Of us.
Absolutely. Well, for myself, if I ever find myself in Muncie, I'm going to be knocking on your door to get some of that food.
You have a home in Muncie.
I appreciate that.
Always.
Thank you.